Hello, monkeys, and welcome to the Live Wild or Die podcast. I'm your host, Monkey Dan. We're coming at you from the wild this week, and I wanted to begin this episode by addressing a few of the questions that we received on the Monkey YouTube channel. And the first question comes from Monkey Bradford, and his question was basically asking for the monkey and wild perspective on nutrition, eating, what I like to call fueling. And to be honest, we could have an entire podcast dedicated to the topic of nutrition, so I don't want to dive too deep today, but I thought it might be worthwhile sharing kind of how I eat on a daily basis and kind of the general principles behind that. And I'd also like to note that I'm not recommending that you follow what I do exactly. I really believe that nutrition is something that's it's very personal, and there's a lot of great templates out there that you can use to start and then kind of fine tune what works for you as you go along that journey. So, Monkey Dan's kind of typical eating schedule looks something like this. So, during the week, my first meal of the day is typically 3 to 4 eggs. And I'll cook that in a cast iron skillet. I'll use ghee. I'll use butter. I'll use rendered bacon fat. And with that, I will also have an entire avocado, so a whole avocado. And my little luxury with that is I sprinkle this chili lime seasoning from Trader Joe's. It's delicious. And I intentionally said my first meal of the day. Sometimes I'll skip breakfast, or at least I'll wait to eat until later in the day. So sometimes that might be maybe noon or even 1 p.m. And I've been experimenting with that, especially on days I know I'm not going to go super hard in the morning. Maybe I'm just going for a light run around the neighborhood or even a hike. So I'm in more of this fat burning metabolism. If you're going to go hard and you're going to go high octane, for me, it helps to have a little bit more fuel earlier in the day. So first meal. Then, when I head out to Monkey HQ, out into the wild, whatever I'm doing, I'll bring along with me lunch, so I brown bag it. Rarely eat out for lunch, if ever. So in that includes typically a banana, a few ounces of mixed nuts, which there's almonds, there's pistachios, there's macadamias, and there's a few others I can't think of off the top of my head. But mixed nuts. And then kind of the main course is going to be leftovers from dinner, which we'll get to dinner in a second here. And then I also try and bring a big ass salad inspired by Mark Sisson from Mark's Daily Apple. Great blog if you haven't checked it out. So I'll bring this big salad with me. And for dressing, I'll use an olive oil, an extra virgin olive oil, along with a white wine vinegar. So lunch is relatively light. I've noticed that when I eat a big meal in the middle of the day, I don't feel good. I like to keep it light. And then dinner's where I'll really refuel. So let's just take last night's dinner, for example, and we can kind of use that for a discussion moving forward. But last night we had tacos, so we had grass-fed ground beef, mixed in a little seasoning with that, and used an organic sour cream with that. Is delicious. Organic cheddar cheese, sauteed up red peppers and orange peppers. And we also had a salad with that. So, you know, if you look at that on a plate, definitely there's meat, but it's really quite a bit of vegetables. So I try and eat as many vegetables as I can. And by no means do I skip on the meat. I eat a lot of meat. I eat a lot of protein, but basically, I eat an unlimited amount of vegetables. And then after dinner, might have a glass of red wine. During the week, I don't drink a ton during the week, if at all. And typically before bed, I'll have this ginger turmeric tea I really enjoy. And depending on how I'm feeling, I might put a half a tablespoon of honey in that. So pretty simple diet, especially during the week. I'm a little more regimented. Again, it's that egg avocado breakfast every day. Lunch is leftovers from the night before, along with typically maybe a banana or an orange, some nuts. Also, that salad I try and make a regular. that regular appearance in my midday eating. And the dinner, protein, and then heavy on the vegetables. So, you know, it's basically a paleo-esque template. I still eat, I'll eat grains here and there, but not as a base to my diet. So, very general overview. I think being heavy on the vegetables, avoiding processed foods is also super important. I think that's a way a lot of people get too much sugar and just too many calories in general. And again, we'll have a whole episode where we dive into nutrition here. And the next question comes from Monkey Jake, and he's actually the monkey that has done our DIY videos. If you haven't seen those, they're up on the Monkey YouTube channel. They're also up on our website, and he makes great videos of how to make your own monkey equipment. Thank you, Jake. And his question was the design process behind monkey bars. And again, we could definitely have probably several episodes dedicated to just this topic, but I'm going to begin by just sharing the origin of monkey bars. So literally how we came up with the idea. So it was January of 2013. I bought a one-way plane ticket out to Colorado, and I met David, who's Monkey co-founder in Boulder. And at the time, our business idea that I came out here to work on was the Wild Gym. I mentioned this in the first episode, but the Wild Gym was basically this outdoor kind of CrossFit-esque, calisthenic park-esque upgraded gym that would go in communities and parks, at schools, maybe even at military bases, anywhere where it would be fitting to have this outdoor training facility. However, he was in MBA school up at CSU Fort Collins, and one of his classmates, he said, you know what, I want to be able to bring the gym with me out into the wild. And I'd spent a lot of time training out in the wild when I was a wilderness ranger and a firefighter. So I'm thinking, heck yeah, that sounds awesome. And so basically what we did was we went to the hardware store. We bought a bunch of random stuff. We bought webbing, duct tape, and we bought this bamboo that you use for gardening, like to hold up tomato plants and things like that. Cut all this stuff up. And originally we were trying to make this kettlebell. So the concept was you'd have this bamboo handle and this kind of sack underneath it that you could put a rock into or fill it with sand, whatever. And so we kind of made this rough prototype of that, and we put a shoe in it, and David's holding this thing. He goes to do a big swing with it, goes all the way up overhead, like a kettlebell swing, if those of you that are familiar with that. So he does this big kettlebell swing, and because it's not a rigid apparatus like a solid iron kettlebell, the webbing rotates in the handle, flips around, and basically the shoe kicks him in the back of the head. It hit him pretty hard, but it knocks something loose because his eyes lit up like a wild man, and he's looking down, then he looks at me and goes, well, what if we put the suspension line inside the handle? And I look at him and I go, dude, that is genius. And we had two of these handles, this rough cut bamboo. We used these pipe clamps on the end to keep the cut ends from splintering. And we just used this P cord, basically this paracord. And so we each had the first prototype of a monkey bar. We went for a hike holding them, saying how this is going to be a $1 million idea and blah, 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 blah. We were so excited. We went to dinner that night. We brought them everywhere. It was hilarious. So from there, we hooked up with some designers, and the original vision for Monkey Bar, so this was 2013 going into 2014, so we launched the Kickstarter for Monkey Bars 1 in 2014. The original vision was actually to have the handle, the grip part, be bamboo, and we still have a prototype of that. It's beautiful. It's huge. It's like 8 inches long. It's this huge bar with all the Spectraline stuffed inside. And it was the original one was made out of bamboo, but just from a manufacturing standpoint, it wasn't feasible then. Something we could maybe look into now. But so we launched that. We ended up eventually shortening the length, and we used maple wood instead of bamboo for the grip. But the core has always been aluminum, so it's super strong. And one thing we always were really proud of is we have this taper to the grip. So most fitness equipment either has this opposite, so it's a concave. So a lot of dumbbells will have this. We actually added a taper, and I love the way, I think it feels so good in the hands. We did human factors engineering with our designers, so it's designed to hit basically the middle of the bell curve as far as the optimal grip for a human being. And I think that's just why they feel so good when you hold them. So that's a very short anecdote of the very early design stages of Monkey Bars. And obviously there's been a lot that's happened since then. But to be honest, where we are today is based on feedback from you, the monkey community. So our ears are always open. If you have ideas, if you have ways we can improve our products, please feel free to reach out. So as I mentioned in the first episode, I wanted to talk about the monkey lifestyle, monkey training, and also share stories of adventure and talk to other monkeys about how they're being wild. So I thought I'd set the momentum for that by sharing a story of my own. And by no means do I want every episode to just be me talking about myself. I'd love to have other monkeys on. If you think you have a story that monkeys would like to hear, shoot me a note, leave a comment, and we can talk about having you on the Live Wild or Die podcast. So the story begins. It was September of 2009. I was in the fall season of my second year of wildland firefighting, and this was up in northern Montana, northwest corner of Montana. And when you are a wildland firefighter, you're basically working all summer. It's very hard to take extended time off to get out in the wild. Did a lot of day trips, but it was really hard to get out. There's many weekends where I'd have plans, and at the last second I'd get called out to go onto a fire, which is what I signed up for. But there was a weekend in September. I finally had a free weekend, and there was this peak. There was actually two peaks that I've been dying to climb. One was called Rising Wolf. It's on the east side of Glacier National Park. And I was looking at the weather, and it was showing this kind of unsettled, maybe wintry mix, but it wasn't saying, you know, an epic storm or anything like that. So woke up super early, drove over the Continental Divide to the east side of the Rocky Mountains to the Two Medicine area, super wild area. Hit the trail, and it's an 18-mile round trip. And I was actually trying to do what's called a twofer, and I got that term from the wild man Ed Viesters. He's the first American to climb all the 8,000-meter peaks. Check him out. He's a wild man. So I was going to try and do this twofer with Rising Wolf and another peak called Flinch Peak that shares a ridge. So it's an overcast day. It's fairly cold, but nothing Arctic, not horrible. And in Glacier, the trails, it's really fun hiking, really great trail running. It's a gentle climb up these valleys for maybe 3 to 5 miles, and then you hit the head of the valley, and it's usually a steep climb up to a ridge or a peak. So beautiful hike in, climb up to this saddle, and basically right when I got to the saddle, it started to snow. And from that point on, you're all off trail. But fortunately, you're following a ridge at that time, so as long as there's visibility, it's relatively easy to find your way. You're on a ridge. As long as you stay on that ridge, it's hard to get lost, right? So it starts to snow, but it's a relatively light snow and hasn't really started sticking yet. So I continue up, and the climbing on this route is class 3, which is light scrambling. So mountain climbing is rated from a class 1 to class 5 scale, 1 being walking on a flat trail. Class 2 is walking on a trail, maybe uphill with maybe a little bit of rockiness. Class 3 would be off trail with some scrambling. So scrambling being you're using hands and feet, but a fall is, there is maybe some exposure, maybe some potential for injury or even death with a fall, but more or less it's safe. Class 4 is class 3, but with exposure. So again, it's relatively easy climbing, but if you fall, you could probably die. And class 5 is, I think, technical rock climbing. If you fall, you're definitely dead. So this route on Rising Wolf is class three. I'm going to say class three plus. So there's definitely spots where you would at least break a leg, and depending on how you fell, you may have something worse. But so I'm scrambling up this ridge, and the snow starts to increase, and it also starts to stick. And so by this time, I've covered quite a bit of distance. So the trail behind me is getting filled in with snow, or at least my downclimb is getting filled in with snow. Not that I was on a trail. So eventually I get to a point where I can't really see. I can't see the summit, and it's snowing hard. And I decide to turn down, and the first pitch I have to down climb is, I'll never forget, it was this kind of low angle corner, but it was super easy when it was dry. Now it's covered in snow and ice. So I don't have crampons. I don't have ice tools. I'm down climbing this snowy, icy corner on an exposed ridge. That was definitely that class three plus section. And I do that several more times going down. Finally, I hit a point where you're more or less hiking on the ridge, but the challenge now is it's a complete whiteout. So I've never before and never since have I been in a whiteout where you totally lost all depth perception, all perspective of distance. I literally felt dizzy. It was so weird. So I had zero depth perception. Now I'm starting to get a little nervous because even though you're on this ridge and it's walking terrain, if you dove off to either side, you could definitely take a big fall. And there's probably about 6 inches of fresh snow now. So this is after a couple hours. It was snowing hard. And I was starting to sit off these mini avalanches, and it's just snow on this smooth rock. So that started to sketch me out. I didn't want to get swept off the side of this ridge. And I'm definitely getting alarmed, definitely feeling like, what have I gotten myself into at this point? And so I keep falling the ridge. I keep slipping in these little slides, and I'm honestly starting to freak out. And up ahead of me, I see these tracks in the snow. And at first, I'm elated. I think, oh, those are my tracks. I'll follow them back to the trail. It'll be no problem. So I walk up to the first track, look down, take a step, and then I double take and realize it's a huge grizzly footprint. Huge. I mistaked it for my own boot track. So it's a big freaking grizzly track on this ridge in a blizzard. It's snowing so hard. That track couldn't have been more than 20, maybe 30 minutes old, but who knows? It could have been 5 minutes old. It was snowing so hard. The tracks were getting filled in so quickly. So I see these grizzly tracks. Now I'm terrified. I'm alone on this ridge. It's a whiteout. There's a grizzly bear. It's late in the fall. I know they're trying to bulk up, get as much energy as they can before they hibernate. It's probably the most terrified and probably the most I've ever felt not at the top of the food chain. So, you know, at that point, all I can do is continue on. So I continued on very, very alert, kept looking behind me, always had this sense of something chasing me, which there's a grizzly bear wandering around. What else do you expect? So I'm going down, keep looking over my shoulder, praying I don't see a grizzly following me down. Finally, I get back to this saddle, and I can just barely see this slight indentation in the snow where it was the trail. And I hit that trail, and I've never run so fast in boots downhill. And luckily, I descended quite a bit, and the snow turned to rain as I got lower, so I was no longer running in the snow. And ran into a couple other hikers. I must have looked like I came from an alternate dimension. And basically ran all the way back to my car, got back just as the storm cleared. And honestly, that was probably one of the times I've most been relieved and honestly thought I was going to die out there, or at least that's what it felt like. So short little story of grizzly bears while climbing mountains. Hopefully you guys have better stories, and I've got a few more as well that may spark some more imagination. But again, if you guys have a story of adventure, a close call, or just doing something wild, shoot us a note, shoot me an email, and we can talk about having you on the Live Wild or Die podcast. So thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you all for being monkeys. Stay wild out there and monkey on.